On a glorious weekend for Perth, Alex Aparkas gets his Glory Girls off to a cracking start. Berkey goes bang at Amy Park. Sydney and City stutter. And are the North Terrace still booing Jonathan Aspro? All that and more coming up. This is the Far Post Perth podcast.
Will of course be the target. Clisby with Burke on the left foot. What a shot!
Sweet sounds of an Anthony Burke Gilroy goal as heard courtesy of Paramount Plus. What a performance it was from the Perth Glory. We're going to go through it all this afternoon. The weekly wrap presented by the Far Post Perth podcast. Blaine Treadgold with you. Next to me, Mr. Tommy Dolman. Afternoon, mate.
Hi, Blaine. Yeah, thanks for having me back. Episode 3 and, yeah, music to the ears. That brings back some fond memories from Sunday.
Let's get into it. What did you make of the performance to start off with?
So I thought the performance was good. The game in itself was obviously turned on its head. We have to be real by the red card. I think a lot of the events that happened in the second half and the way that Glory were able to get on the ball a bit more, the main contributing factor was Rui Marchand's red card and the victory going down to 10 men. But I thought the Glory seemingly took a little bit of performance away from that. I know they lost the game against Western United the week before. I thought they had a decent amount of opportunities in that game. And on another night, we were saying last week that they may have got a result out of that game. This weekend, they had their chances. They took them. And all in all, it was a pretty good performance against a victory team that were reduced to 10 men.
I was just really impressed with the intent they came. They came straight out of the blocks. And there was a few comments there. And Georgeski on the commentary was talking about Burke Gilroy, and I think he was fanboying there for a bit. He was certainly name dropping Berkey, yeah, my mate Berkey it was. But he just said a little things, and when he started to mention it, I was like, he's actually right there. And it was little things like these boys aren't backing down; they were getting in the face of victory. Anthony Burke Gilroy was upsetting Jason Davidson. Jason Davidson turned around and started to go in a couple of times. He was really getting under his skin. But I reckon the turning point with those set pieces in that first kind of 25 minutes, where Perth had a couple of corners there. Big Daryl Lachman was just straight up in the face of Ivan Kelliver and had him flapping in the breeze at some of those balls coming into the box, and really just disrupting, I think, is probably the best word to put.
Yeah, they definitely got on. They definitely had a period in the game before the red card, you're right, where they did look threatening. Mm. Albeit the set pieces probably were the most threatening aspect that they had. They didn't really put together too many fluid passages of play, I think it's fair to say, in open play. But yeah, I agree that the intensity was really pleasing to see. And I think that's something that we've, apart from probably the first game when it obviously did take them a little bit of a while to get going in front of the fans, maybe it was a pretty hot atmosphere at HBF Park. But aside from that, I don't think we've been able to complain about the effort, the intensity and the endeavour that the Glory have put in throughout the majority of these opening games. Do you think that's sort of stemmed from the Popovich factor a little bit? Obviously, with Tony Popovich, I know a few of the players were different, but obviously Tony Popovich coaching against the Glory, some of the Glory boys would have been up for that. And obviously as well, I think, do you think that there may be sort of just drilling into that siege mentality sort of thing a little bit?
Absolutely.
And it was something that's worked a little bit for the Phoenix as well, yeah, while they've been in Wollongong. And I wonder if the Glory have sort of just had that almost like an epiphany and sort of gone, right, we're on the road for 6 to 8 weeks here now. Let's build that siege mentality. Let's really make it a camp, and let's really sort of drill down on that for the weeks ahead.
I absolutely agree. It's Perth versus the rest of Australia, and that's the, I reckon that's the mentality that they've built. I reckon there's probably a little bit that Richard Garcia and Stephen McGarry have gone, look, these bastards aren't helping us out at the moment, at the league and all that. It's pure euphemisms, don't get me wrong. I don't think there's any kind of real intent, wrong intent or anything like that. But if that's what helps you win football matches, so be it.
And the names as well, you said Garcia and McGarry, Chris Coyne, Ruben Zadkovic.
Yep.
These guys are tough competitors. Yep. They know what it's like. These are guys who had good careers. They were seasoned campaigners. And there's a lot of young Glory boys in that team. And you see the way that someone, well, I'm sure we'll come on to Luke Bodner a little bit later on, how he was snapping into the challenges. Mm. And Daniel Steins with his enthusiasm as well. And I think that's really something that's starting to show in the last couple of weeks.
That was one thing that was mentioned when I spoke to Neil Sherwin a little bit earlier, was They were leaving the cheeky one in every now and then. And, you know, the old cliche, let them know you're there, boys. It was very much that in that first half.
Yep. And that's how you've got to be, though, when you're playing on the road, Blaine. Mm. You can't just sit back and put 10 men behind the ball and let the opposition have all the possession in the world. You can't let the victory just put their passes together cruisily, or pass the ball into the feet of Brillante, who's going to go out wide and then back in and let them get their head of steam up. No, absolutely not. You've got to be pressing. You've got to be snapping. And we've spoken in previous weeks about this style of football that the Glory have implemented in particular at the NPL level, where they are pressing a lot with those young players. And we're starting to see that a few of those young players are playing it now in this senior squad. And that club-wide philosophy is maybe starting to take its place a little bit, and it certainly reaped the rewards on Sunday, particularly in the later part of the game. And I think one thing, there's two things I sort of wanted to go into in depth, but one of those things, to a lesser extent, is the fitness. I think the Glory are running out games pretty well. I think in the first game, they looked a little bit off the mark early on, but I certainly think they had the chances against Western United and were a little bit unlucky. And then I know they had an extra player against Melbourne Victory, but they still finished that game really strong, and you just sense that it's building nicely, don't you?
Yeah, no, I think I've been very, very impressed. I mean, I'm not too sure about the fitness, because we are very injury-ravaged at the moment, but I get what you're saying about the guys
The in-game fitness.
They're running out 90 minutes and doing it pretty comprehensively, I think. So, yeah, and I'll certainly take your point on that. I wanted to bring up something with you. We did put it out to our listeners on the social media. If you want to get involved on social media, the Far Post Perth on Facebook and Twitter is the way to go about that. And Steph asked all about the formation, and he asked a little bit about these lineups. Now, I've had a little bit of a, and we've talked about this before, and I'm pretty sure you've brought up the same point, this Clisby, Kostike Otter scenario. Where Clisby, why I don't think many people see Clisby as the one who plays at the park. I think more people are likely to see him in that back three, and Kostike, who's got that good power run as well as that brilliant left foot delivery, a little bit further up the park. So I'm trying to work out the thinking behind it, and I'm racking my brain over it.
I mean, the only thing that I can think of is that in terms of aerially with Clisby, in terms of playing in that central defensive position, Blaine, that's the only thing that I could think of. I mean, what we have to look at, though, is has it been successful so far? Has it not worked? Or is it kind of in between with a vision of looking like it may progress?
I think I'd like to see Otter up the park. I think he's picked up a couple of unnecessary yellow cards this season already. Not that they've been malicious or anything like that, but a few last-ditch efforts where probably, especially last season, he was probably used to having that little bit of cover behind him. Now that he hasn't, I'm not sure if he thinks he should come and go kind of style. Come or go kind of style. I think he's in that two minds at times, and I think that's getting him into a little bit of strife.
And we've not quite had the opportunity to see that delivery that he has either well, which is the other thing. It's an interesting one. Does Clisby maybe provide a little bit more energy out wide? I don't know. I don't know what Richie Garcia is seeing, but he's obviously settled on it, given it's something that he's going for in the first 3 weeks of the campaign. So look, if Glory are getting results, they're on 4 points, they're fifth, I think, as things stand. Got a tough game, which we'll come on to. But look, if it's a formula that they're happy to stick with and it's something that he believes is going to work for that left-hand side, there's a number of things as well, like, that we have to think about on a deeper level as well, which aren't perhaps as obvious. But maybe Clisby's partnership with the central midfielder to his right, if he's playing in midfield, is perhaps a little better than what it would be with Otter if he was to more want to get forward and be a bit more direct with his delivery. I'm not sure. I'm just sort of speculating without any sort of real substance. I'm just trying to put some ideas out there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even sure why they're not a little bit more interchangeable. Yeah. If there is that overlap, let Otter go on a run up the park and put in a ball.
Yep, no. Yeah, I'll take your point.
Why not confuse that whole side a little bit more and create a bit more disruption, you know, for lack of a better phrase. there's something about having Bert Gilroy on the right and having Otter on the left that's pretty tasty, if you ask me.
Bert Gilroy has been very exciting, and I'm sure we'll come on to that. But just to finish on that point, I kind of on what you were saying before with the Otter and Clisby thing, one of the big positives for me is has been the defence in the first 3 weeks of the season. I think a lot of the attention was rightly put on the attackers. There's a certain Daniel Sturridge, obviously, who's constantly getting discussed every day, which is getting a little bit tiresome now for me. Mm. So I won't go into any of that. But I want to talk about Daryl Latchman. I want to talk about obviously Bert Gilroy's been playing as a wide centre half. I thought Asprey was absolutely brilliant on the weekend as well. And if you look at the game so far, they played against Adelaide United. They defended pretty well. They were under the cosh, but they managed to withstand that. They only conceded the one goal in that game. They played against Western United, which the goal was obviously one that was obviously preventable, individual error, and probably crossed the line as well, if we're being honest. Mm. And then at the weekend, they kept a clean sheet. So I think if you look at that so far, I think Richard Garcia's got his defence pretty well organised at the moment. I think Luke Bodner's a massive contributing factor as well to that with his energy and screening in front of the defence. But I think Garcia's found a really good system there with that almost sort of 3-4-3 that he's got at the moment. And obviously Otter and Clisby are a part of that, even if we're looking at it from a aesthetic point of view and thinking, maybe should we switch it around a little bit? I don't know.
Mm, it is interesting. And also a point that's been raised over the last little while is how does Callum Timmins fit back into this side if Bodner's absolutely ripping this midfield to shreds at the moment?
Well, you don't change a winning formula,
no,
do you?
No, you don't.
Obviously, Brandon O'Neill's still out at the moment. He's obviously still awaiting the birth of his child as well. So, there's going to be a little bit of time. There might be a position available next to him. I'm not sure, but Daniel Steins has been really good as well. Yep. So, look, it's a good problem to have, I suppose, if you're Richard Garcia, to have those options, especially when we're in a season like this. And again, it's something that we'll come on to lately with the schedule from a glory perspective possibly likely to change at any point. We could be playing games 3 days later as we are doing from the Victory to City. Mm. So that squad depth is going to be tested, and it's going to be really encouraging to have these options available. Yes, there are injuries at the moment, but as we've seen in the FFA Cup, those young players are very capable of stepping up, and it's good signs for the club, I think, in general.
I think you might have touched on it a bit earlier. Do you reckon there was a little bit of ill feeling in this one?
Well, there was a little bit of spikiness.
There was.
Throughout. Yeah. There was some late challenges. There was some a little bit of push and shove. Nothing too sinister, I think. And then, obviously, there was the challenge as well, which kind of blew things up. And that sort of just sparked things a little bit more as the half wore on with some late challenges.
I mean, even Stevie McGarry got sent off towards the end for having a bit of a crack. I think Davidson was having a crack at McGarry. McGarry got sent, and I actually had a bit of a jibe at McGarry that he does such a great job. He can have Wednesday night off. So, no, he's done it.
There was a lot of former players, obviously. There's D'Agostino, Davidson, as you touched on, Guerrier also. You know, there was a lot of links in that game, and I just wonder whether the Glory sort of got themselves a little bit more fired up for that one. It was a pretty obvious thing to say, but it was something that obviously we enjoyed seeing, and I don't know, sometimes I like it when football's a little bit on the edge like that, Blaine. Yeah. I mean, I don't like the constant fouling. I don't like it when the game's slowed down because of it, but I certainly like it when it's in a controlled manner and there's that little bit of needle, because it just makes the game that little bit more exciting.
Yep, I agree. Let's talk about the red card. Now, I've got to say, initially, I said, that's harsh. I didn't think there was any intent in it whatsoever. I was in agreement with whoever said on the commentary that, look, he was really blindsided. He was turning, didn't see Asprey coming, had a crack at the ball, and went. It has been said by the match review panel that red card will stand. Ray Marchand will go for 1 week, so he's not available for the next fixture for Victory. I've since had a bit of another look. I've had a bit of a listen to the commentary and changed my mind, and probably said on second view that probably was a red card. So I'm in agreement with that.
Yeah.
A lot of the commentary has been around the refereeing. Now, I don't want to make this a referee bashing exercise by any means, but the fact that Kurt Ames was about 3 or 4 metres, it looked, away from that challenge, 5-6 maximum, had a pretty good view at it, made the decision, the straight decision for a yellow, got a call in the ear, obviously, and said, look, you might need to go back and have a bit of a look at that. And he did, and he changed his mind to a red. I'm wondering about the inconsistency with his first reaction to say, hey, that's a yellow, and so quick about it. He didn't think it was bang yellow.
I mean, these things happen in real time.
Should he, for example, have used... Oh, just sorry to interrupt, but should he have, for example, said into the ear, look, I'm not sure. Do you guys want to have a bit of a check?
I think this is the whole thing with VAR. At the risk of making this a VAR discussion, there was some other controversial decisions at the weekend, which we'll come on to in our wrap as well. First of all, these things happen very fast in real time.
Yeah.
And even though the VAR is in place, we still have to encourage the referees to have the conviction to make a decision.
That's
if
true.
Kurt Amps thought that in real time that was a yellow card offence, then that was the decision he made. Now, if in hindsight he had a word in his ear saying you might want to go and have a look at that, I'm 100% fine with that, you know. I think and Tony Popovich touched on this in his post-match a little bit, it was the time that was taken to look over the decision at the VAR, which I think was the sort of source of it. And it comes back to how you perceive it to be, whether it's an obvious error or not an obvious error, etc., etc. I'm with you. I thought it was a red card. I think a high boot's a high boot. Aspro's a pretty tall guy. I know that he was stooping slightly as he was trying to make contact with that ball, but it was a pretty reckless challenge. I mean, if you're putting a high boot up in the air with no sort of awareness of what's around you, I just think that's a pretty reckless
thing. And you'd probably say that someone of that experience should know that there's going to be a centre-half coming for that ball behind him.
Yeah, I think you've got to expect that anybody's going to challenge for a ball. Yeah. I don't think you can ever expect a freebie in football, full stop. So, look, I'm with you. I thought it was a red card. I've got no problems with it. I saw there was a little bit of stuff on social media about some previous challenges from last season and how Rojas copped a high boot. Two wrongs don't make a right, you know. Like that's not how football works. I think that was the mistake. The correct decision was given by AMS on the weekend. It did affect the game, but it was the correct decision.
Mm. Yeah, no, and I certainly agree. But shouldn't those people complaining about that last one, that finally this one, they did actually get it right?
Well, they got... Well,
they won't, because they're victory fans.
Well, they got given a penalty at the end of the game as well, Blaine.
Don't get me started on that. Don't get me started on that. That was a clear dive. He jumped into the air, kind of bumped hips with Daniel Steins, I think it was, gone to the ground. It should have been, it never should have been looked at, and it should have been a yellow card for a simulation, in my opinion.
You said it better than I could.
Yeah, it should have never have gone near there. A little bit out today before we take a bit of a break and look at the rest of the league and a little bit of that stunning win for the Glory Girls on Saturday night. A little bit out of the press conference. Andy Keogh is still out. Osama Malik is still out with a groin. Expected to be out for another 2 weeks or so. Mitch Oxburgh is out with a calf. Sideline for another 3 weeks. Liam Reddy has still recovering from this shoulder. Brad Jones likely not to be back until late January. So what we've got at the moment looks like what we're playing with until into the new year, at least.
Is it an overreaction for me to say that I'm not worried about that at all?
No.
Because the way that the NPL boys played was pretty good. I know it's a big step up, and I know that when you're playing games in multiple days, it's difficult. And they are senior players and good players and players who have been important players for the Glory in the past and will be important players as the season rolls on. But I just think that the start of the season's been pretty good, and it's obviously not ideal. You obviously want to be putting your best team out, but you can't do anything about that, really, yeah. Can you? So we are where we are. The other elephant in the room is Sturridge. And I know I said I wasn't going to touch on it, but he's got to take time to get fit, and we've just got to wait. I know people want to hear an update every single day. Today he was off to Queen's Park Rangers, apparently, on some which was
thank you random transfer bots.
Yeah, somebody actually posted one of their other tweets, which had Emil Heskey going to Cruzeiro, which was an interesting one as well. Jeez. So look, it's we've gone a little bit off topic there. We've digressed, but there are injuries. They're not ideal, but I think we've seen that the Glory have got players that are capable of providing the intensity to come in and cover. Particularly, like we saw Kieran Bramwell come off the bench and score and put in a pretty good cameo against Western United on the right. So, look, I'm pretty relaxed about it for now.
Yeah, I'm happy with it as well. And I'm just going to go back to my earlier comments on our first podcast with Donna and Neil when I said, look, I think if we go over here, go over there on this extended period away and we do pick up points where we probably shouldn't, like we did on the weekend, as long as we can see slow and steady progression, I think especially with all these young guys that are getting all their minutes at the moment due to their opportunities and injuries and the likes, I think people have just got to take their foot off a little bit and let it play out, because if they can keep this core together, then they can really start pushing on in years to come. So, I mean, it could be a step onto a larger step down the line.
Just quickly on tomorrow's game, Blaine, I don't know if you want to go into it in more detail in a bit. Would you be happy with the points, continue building on that result, yep, or is it something where you can think City aren't quite at their best? What can we possibly push and get three here?
I think that City have to turn it around sooner or later. I'm a little bit scared that they might do that tomorrow night. So I'm going to say I'll be happy to take a point tomorrow night. And I'm going to say the old, you know, the old tournament cliche, you know, if you're playing in a world, you know, in a qualifier, for example, win at home, draw away. I think that's what Perth needs to do, is just try and pick up as many points as they can on the road, whether it's draws, whether it, even better if it's a win. But if it's a draw, I don't think that's nothing to be ashamed about at all.
It's going to be a tough game. The quick backup's obviously going to be a challenge, particularly with the injuries, although I have, as I have said, it's good to have that squad and good to have players who may be coming back and available shortly. I suppose my main worry is as to whether, you spoke about it at the top of the show, Blaine, the intensity that Glory showed.
Mm.
If Glory are to get a positive result tomorrow, they're going to have to go in with that exact same intensity that they showed against Victory. There's no reason why they can't do that, but it's just whether, having played on Sunday, can they get up against a good City team? They're not playing at home against an average team who are inconsistent. They're playing against a team who are everybody's title favourites. Well, City might be mid-table and average on the current ladder, but they are the team who everybody expected to win. So that's the challenge for the Glory. Can they match the intensity that they put out there on Sunday? And if they do, then who knows? I'm sure another positive performance and a result could happen.
And, of course, City have that extra 24 hours off as well, which isn't going to help us too much. So, yeah, I mean, that is that factor as well. Let's go to a quick break, and we'll continue this discussion just looking at Melbourne City, and then we'll start having a bit of a look at the other games. This is the Far Post Perth podcast.
If you're as passionate about the A-League as we are, you won't want to miss a second of this season's action. And the easiest, quickest, and best way to catch every game from every angle is with the A-League Live app. Simply search A-League Live or Sportsmate in the Apple or Google Play stores.
Yeah, big thanks to our friends at Sportsmate for their support of the show. Make sure you check out the A-League Live app. It's a beauty. You can get it wherever you get all your apps, the Android store or the Apple store. We're in the middle of the, I guess, a bit of a preview for Perth Glory to take on Melbourne City. It is happening tomorrow, being Wednesday afternoon, or today if you pick it up the next day. 4:45 Wednesday afternoon at Amy Park. What are you making about Melbourne City, particularly their front three at the moment, Tommy?
Should we touch on the Western United Melbourne City game from the weekend as part of that, as part of the start of our wrap?
Please do.
City are an interesting case, aren't they? So in round one, they defeated Brisbane 2-1. They were in control for 70 minutes, and then they let Brisbane back in. They were nearly... they were unlucky to probably hold on and win that game. They then drew 2-2 against Adelaide United, having started poorly, got a grip of the game, and then conceded late with a howler. And then at the weekend, they had a lot of possession and were frustrated by a Western United team who defended really well and were able to hold on and get the 3 points. It's interesting for me. We spoke about it briefly last week, how Melbourne City, given that they are in this City football group, kind of are under this umbrella where they have to play with a certain brand of football and a certain style.
Mm.
A possession-based game, if you like.
Yep.
But their front three of Lecky, Naboo and McLaren are almost suited to counter-attacking. So that's a really fascinating dilemma, I think, that Kis Norbo is going to have to solve. It's all well and good adding Lecky to that team, but if you're not going to release the ball quickly and give these guys an opportunity to run at players one-on-one, it's going to be it's almost like a contrast in styles, and I suppose that's the thing that... I mean, I'm looking at it at the moment, like, they look pretty good aside from that, but it's just... Can they get it together, and how long is it going to take for them to figure it out? Do they have to mix up that front three, to be honest? Do they have to maybe drop one of them and bring in Attilio? That's not going to make... That's going to confuse a few people, I think, or one of those stars isn't going to be happy. But something's got to change, I feel, for them to be a bit more fluid.
I think they're just a little bit lost going forward. I think they've possibly got too many strikers at the moment. I think that instead of trying to bulk up a little bit more of their creativity coming through the guts, that's from the limited football that I've seen of City this year. It also seems like they don't really have too much of a, possibly not enough of an engine at the moment, because we've seen Brisbane Roar come back at them. We've seen Adelaide United come back at them. Are they likely to be able to play out 90 plus minutes? I don't know.
Yeah, and well, on the evidence of what we've seen so far, they have been patchy. That's absolutely fair to say. Some of their football that we have seen in those spurts has been pretty good, and they've looked dominant, and they've managed the game really well in periods. But then there's been stages where they've sort of let it slip. So, yeah, no, you're right. It's going to be interesting. The talent's obviously there, and you would always back talented players to eventually get it right. As far as we're concerned, we just hope that doesn't start on Wednesday.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking. I did manage to have a bit of a look at Patrick Osorbo's press conference. He was quite frustrated with it all. He was asked a few questions by a few journos at that, and he got a little bit agitated when they were kind of pressing some good questions here. He said, actually, in a statement that's out, I think it was today, Kosnorbo suggested expecting automatic success. It was unrealistic. Well, mate, you've had your success. You're now the hunted, so you've got to be able to push on because everyone else is.
Yep, and... it's been said before, but it's really hard to defend a title in the A-League. Not many teams do it. So, to your point, especially with... normally the reason it's so difficult to defend a title is because there's obviously a lot of turnover in squads. Players move on, players move overseas or interstate to bigger clubs, for example, or to different clubs or back home. But Melbourne City have largely kept the same team, and they've obviously added Lecky, as we said before, and that's why they've been favoured by so many.
Yep.
So it's just going to be really interesting to see how that all thrashes out. But look, it was another good result for Western United. I know we weren't too kind to them last week. We thought Glory had a pretty good sort of a decent enough grip on the game in terms of the chances, that being spectacular. But John Aloisi has just got them. They're not spectacular by any stretch, but they've got two wins on the board as things stand, and they went down 1-0 to Victory in a very tight game in the other game. So, look, they're pretty... They've got two wins on the board, as I said. They're looking okay at the moment without being spectacular. And I had him as a bit of a smoky at the start of the season, so I'd expect that to continue.
You did mention Marco Tilio, which it says here in the little transcript of his post-match press conference, and he said that just because someone doesn't get on the score sheet doesn't mean they had a bad game. It's not time for change in regards to their strike options, so it looks like they might persist with Naboot, McLaren and Lecky.
It's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, with Lecky, he's obviously still building his fitness up as well, so... ultimately, the only way to get fitter is to play minutes. So chopping and changing may not be the best thing, but there'll be definitely a watch on what their starting lineup is tomorrow when it comes out, and whether they persist with that front three, as you say.
Surely we go back to a back four
to defend it.
Yep.
Well, it depends, I suppose. If you're confident with your wing backs, I don't see why the Glory would have to change their system.
No. I don't know. Did you
change your team off the back of a 3-0 win away at Victory?
No, but Victory is a very, very different side to what City is.
I don't know. I think if the Glory have played 3-4-3 in their first three games of the season, I don't think you're going to suddenly make wholesale changes.
Yeah, I wonder.
Particularly off a 3-0 win. I mean, maybe you start with Clisby and with Bert Gilroy a little deeper and start with five at the back.
Five, yeah.
Maybe just see how things go. And then maybe make a little bit of a tweak in game, but I wouldn't.
Or even if someone like Bodnar drops just that little bit deeper to create that little bit of a screen.
Yeah, possibly. Obviously, Calver went off with an injury as well, didn't he, at the weekend. He may have been somebody who could have played on the right side of that defence as a right back. I'm not sure on his
injury status. He's a centre back by trade, isn't he?
He has played right back in the past, though, I think. Yeah.
Well, he started out, I mean, he put that delicious ball into Bruno on the weekend, so he can certainly get up there and put a ball in. We saw that. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. That game tomorrow, Wednesday being tomorrow, 4:45. I think that's probably going to be shown down at Anshebane with a few of the Glory Fan United guys and everything like that if you want to get down and have yourself a pint. It's going to be a hot day, and you're probably going to feel like one. After a day's work. Let's have a little bit of a look at some of the other results from across the round. It did start all the way back on Friday night. Was the Wellington Phoenix going down at 2-0 to Western Sydney. Now, this Tom Ahmed goal, there was a lot going on in this.
VAR klaxon. Have you got one, Blaine? Have you got a klaxon?
A klaxon?
For the VAR controversy again that happened.
Well, there was just a lot going on. I mean, and it took me three or four looks at it to go, oh, look, I was like Leonardo DiCaprio in that movie where he's just pointing at the screen because is that The Wolf of Wall Street? Is that the one? Yeah. There was a massive push. There was the whether the ball even crossed the line, which on second review I think it did as well.
Yes, it did.
And there was even the... the fact that the ball seemed to come off Tom Ahmed's arm as well. So, there was a few things going on in that.
See, I'm not the first person to say this, so apologies if I'm repeating myself and you've heard this elsewhere. But my eyes were focused on whether the ball had crossed the line to the point where I didn't initially see the Ahmed push. And it was only upon watching the replay of the goal.
That's what I'm saying.
And wondering how the goalkeeper ended up where he did and all the defenders falling over like bowls, like bowling pins at a Tenpin bowling alley. Like, what sort of happened there? It was a push. And there's no doubt about that. There was a push.
Oh, it was heavy.
That caused the chaos that obviously led to the goal. There's no doubt about that. And it kind of summed up the Phoenix's night, really. They were super unlucky. I don't know if you saw the amount of chances that they created. In particular, Roofer nearly stabbed home. Then they nearly bundled in from a corner. Then they were unfortunate with the laws of the game again, as I think it was Laws poked over the line. But because the goalkeeper was higher up, there was only one defender on the line in a beanie, and you have to have two players.
That's the most ridiculous rule.
It's a bizarre rule that I always forget about, but obviously exists. And then Piscopo put one wide also, and then obviously the Wanderers get that little bit of a break. Wellington then come back, have more chances, and then they get this runaway goal at the very end where Katrumpis is running from halfway and slots in. It was a bit of the sort of the bit of the Benny Hills about it almost.
Round three, though, do you push your keeper up trying to chase an equaliser?
Why not?
I don't mind it, but...
It was just that sort of night for the Phoenix, though. Yeah. They were so unlucky. And I feel for them a little bit. I think I'm more confused by how the Wanderers are unbeaten after three games with a win and two draws to their name. Given how we've spoken about them in the first couple of weeks of the show, they've been far from convincing in all of those games. They got convincingly outplayed by the Jets in that belting game last weekend. They were very fortunate this week. They got a 1-1 in a derby against Sydney, which was obviously a bit more tense. But Sydney were probably the better side for me in that game.
They've ridden their luck a fair bit, though, haven't they? So that can't go on all season.
Just back on the VAR, Blaine. If we're not using it properly, why are we using it at all?
I'm getting deja vu from last week's conversation because I think I said exactly the same thing. If we aren't using it properly and we haven't got the tools to use it properly, get rid of it.
But then it took so long the Hemed goal obviously went over the line and the A-League doesn't have goal line technology either. And to me, that's arguably more important than... Well, if you're not going to use it for a push that Hemed made, at least make sure that you've got the technology to make sure the ball goes over the line instantaneously, which is far more important. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think this is what everyone kind of gets people's goats because we're not sure how it's being used. if it's being used correctly. Well, it's certainly not being used correctly in a lot of people's eyes, and it's certainly not being used correctly. The reason for that is because we don't have the equipment and the tools to be able to use it correctly.
Yeah.
We're going on. Let's have a look at Brisbane, Adelaide. Both sides doing everything except for score in this one. Hot conditions it was. I don't know too much about Brisbane, but I know it gets very, very warm. I did hear after the game, Scott Neville said it was about 32 degrees at kickoff, and up there with all the storms that they're getting, you can guarantee the humidity would have been up about 80 or 90% as well, so it wouldn't have been too pleasant. Ivanovic, I like this kid. He just has a red hot crack. Doesn't always finish, but he just has a crack.
He should have had a hat trick on the weekend. Delianov made two really good saves to deny him.
Yep.
And he had a couple of other moments as well where he probably could have done better. But I suppose if you want it to be glass half full, at least he's putting himself in the positions where he is going to get the opportunities. And if he can work on that finishing, maybe get a little bit more luck at times like Hemmer did, then maybe his luck will change. But kind of on that point, I just sort of look at Brisbane and I almost think, where are the goals coming from? We've seen those flashes from Ivanovic, but they don't quite have that star player for me, that game-changing player.
No,
I think Jay O'Shea's can do it every so often, but I don't think they have a player who can do it regularly enough, and that would be my big concern from them because they certainly had the better of the moments against Adelaide from the highlights that I saw. But obviously, Brisbane are obviously at the bottom of the league and they've only taken now, is it the 1 point from their first three games? So it's going to be difficult for them. They've got Western United at the weekend as well. So another challenging game for them. But I was going to ask you about Adelaide, Blaine. Obviously, we saw them up close in round one. Three draws from them now and a little bit of a mixed bag. What are your thoughts from them? Are the three draws kind of synonymous to the fact that that's about where they are, the sort of middle of the road, or they've been unlucky?
Yeah, I think they were at mid-table. I thought their best game was probably against us, from what I've seen so far. Mind you, I'll probably take that back because I think their best half was probably definitely against Melbourne City, where they came back from 2-0 down with some superb finishes. Their press was just unreal. But I did have them, I'm pretty sure, around mid-table, 6-7-8 kind of style. So
they started well in the first two games, not as well in this game, but they finished well. I think they ended the game a little bit stronger, and they probably had the best chance to win it late on through Yangi. But a clean sheet on the road, as you said about the glory before, if you get your points on the road, then I think Adelaide would probably take that. And obviously they've been to Perth, they've been to Brisbane, they've played the defending champions at home. They'd probably see that as a glass half full starts the season rather than a glass half empty, I think.
Javi Lopez will get a week off. That was the most ridiculous second yellow that I've ever seen. It was a shocking tackle. He was lucky to get away with a yellow to begin with. Opened his mouth, said some absolute... Looks like he was giving Chris Beath absolute dog's abuse there for a while. Now, if I am Carl Viet, I'm giving him a week off anyway because that was horrendous.
If I'm Football Australia, I'm coming down hard on that because that was a terrible challenge. And then to go off on one like that afterwards and make a complete fool of yourself as he did, that's the sort of thing that you see on a Sunday at amateur level, Blaine, from somebody who thinks that they're playing. They think they're playing in the Premier League, but no, sorry, mate, you're playing in Division 4 or Division 5 on a Sunday. Get on with the game and stop being abusive to the referee. I just thought it was embarrassing. And if I'm the FA, I'm coming down hard on that and saying, look, you cannot...
But it's just stupidity where it was. It was out wide. Nobody was going anywhere. And you're in the final couple of minutes. You give away a free kick. If Brisbane had scored from that, it would have served him right.
Yeah, absolutely. And more to the point that I was aiming towards, you don't want kids looking at that and seeing that behaviour either.
No, I get that point too.
So that's where I'm coming from on it.
Yep.
Make a statement on the behaviour. Okay, the challenge was a poor one. Whether you're going to give a card, whatever colour for that, that's a subjective thing or an object, whatever you want to say. But the behaviour for me is the unacceptable thing, and that should rightly go punished in my eyes.
I just want to fly through these to make sure we give ourselves enough time to talk about the Glory Women's team. The other results, Melbourne City going down 1-0 to Western United. Dylan Wenzel-Halls, who we've talked about before, got the goal there, so he's just growing in confidence as well. Newcastle and Sydney FC, this was a beauty before we headed out to the Perth Glory Glory women's game on Saturday evening. Sydney up 2-0. Valentino Yule, superb again, leading the goal scoring across the league. Just finishing was just clean, crisp.
Box office Jets, baby. Yeah. I've said it. They are good to watch. They've probably played in the three games of the round in the first 3 weeks of the season. Yeah. Their game against the Mariners, we were talking about how fun that second half of that game was in particular.
This was better.
This was a great game. The Wanderers-Jets game the week before was great. This, three really good games that they've played in so far. They're just compulsive viewing. Yeah. They are the best team to watch in the A-League at the moment, even though their league position and they're yet to win a game. I just love what Arthur Pappas is doing. They're so fun. And in someone like Yule, who just took the chances the way he did, and that's super encouraging.
And Pena and Bumal have been superb as well. That volley, Bumal, that just clipped over the top of the bar there, that was very, very well taken.
Are you worried about Sydney, Blaine? Just quickly, I know you want to move on, but are you worried about Sydney? Two points after
let's talk about that, because the big news of the day today is Alex Grant has been... Alex Grant. You've had a wonderful season over in the Asian Champions League. Ryan Grant has just tested positive to COVID-19. So they've lost Luke Bratton, and they're probably going to lose Ryan Grant for 2-3 weeks, you think, and that's a quick recovery, as well as maybe getting back. He could be out up to a month.
It's a big... we sort of look ahead and we pick one fixture out from round four, don't we, a little bit, Blaine? Mm. But the Mariners-Sydney game this weekend is a big watch for me on Sunday afternoon.
Yep.
I want to see a response from Sydney. I want to see something... The Mariners, I think, are the Mariners. They're going to be in the lower reaches. I don't think they're going to be in the top six. But they are going to show flashes from game to game where they can cause teams problems.
Mm.
We know that. I think we're waiting to see whether Sydney FC can get some momentum going, because they've been pretty not abject. They've probably been a bit below par in the first few weeks of the season. And as you say, the Bratton injury seemed to affect them last week. Obviously, Ryan Grant's going to be out now for what you'd think would be a period of time at least. So, they really need to get guys like Ninkovic and Bobo sort of moving. Lafondre's scoring as well. That's probably the more worrying thing.
And Elvis Kamsoba scoring on the weekend. Yeah. I thought he was quite good, actually.
So they have actually been getting in the goals. Yep. But they've clearly got some issues at the other end in keeping them out.
The other result they're having gone through is MacArthur 1-0 over Central Coast, who we were just mentioning. MacArthur ticket pricing is terrible. And when you've got someone that the MacArthur Bulls come out and said, well, everyone knows that if you get your tickets early, then it's not going to cost you as much. It's a stupid comment. Shouldn't be playing that much, especially to go out to Penrith. That's not even your home ground. People are making the trek out there. Give people as least hoops as possible to jump through to make sure that they can go to the football.
Why would you charge $40 for 3,000 people to go to the game when you could charge... I've not done the sum, so apologies. When you could try and get 10,000 people in there and charge $25 a ticket or $20 a ticket.
Mate, you should be down to every single local football club and saying, bring dad down or bring mum down, and the kids are in for free.
Yeah, kids in for free, or $5 tops done. if you really want to do it. But yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, needs to be sorted out, and it's not just MacArthur, it's across the league. Get it done. Returning to Campbelltown next week, for the next home game will be the MacArthur Bulls. Let's just have a quick look at the fixtures coming up. We do want to get into this A-League women's round as well. Western United, Adelaide United Friday night. Central Coast will take on Western Sydney Saturday. Melbourne City, Melbourne Victory, which is going to be...
I think you're looking at
the wrong one. Oh, I'm looking at the wrong one. Sorry, let's start again. Let's start that again. We've got Melbourne City, Perth tomorrow night. Newcastle, Wellington, Western United, Brisbane Roar, Adelaide United, Melbourne Victory. Still going to be a good game, and that is the major game on free-to-air as well, I'm hearing. So Western Sydney will take on MacArthur, and a bit of a battle of the West out there in Sydney, and Central Coast will take on Sydney FC. Now, Tommy, let's get to the important stuff, and that is the Perth Glory women. It was dramatic. We were down there. It was a balmy night. It was a great crowd, and the goal that got Perth Glory over the line sounded a little bit like this.
Rain still fighting for it. Trying to go past them all. Rash out. Oh, mistake in the back, and Worth has seen it roll past her.
Yeah, it was a horrid mistake by the Brisbane Roar goalkeeper, but Alex Aparkas and the team, they did not care one iota. The first win in, well, they didn't win at all last season, Tommy, so they were absolutely stoked, and so was the crowd.
Their last win was actually against Brisbane Roar in the season before, so for them to, I think I'm just more pleased for Alex Aparkas and the players, most of all. As you said before, last season was essentially a write-off due to COVID, getting players over late, various other factors. But what I have to really praise Alex on is the way that he got his team together early on. He made his signings and recruitment was made early on, and that gave him the best possible time to put that identity into his team that he wants to, which is obviously going to take time because there's some new players and some pieces that still need gelling and working together. But I think he's got them pretty well drilled. I think he can see what he's trying to do. I thought Brisbane probably looked a little bit more composed on the ball. Maybe some of their more seasoned players, likes of Shay Connors, she was good. Obviously, Katrina Gorry came back into that team. So that's an amazing story also as well.
For those that don't know, Katrina Gorry had a baby,
4 months ago.
Four months, was it? Yeah, I knew it was a matter of months. So, yeah, no, superb effort to get back out in the park.
Yeah, so that's I thought they were probably a little bit more composed on the ball, and Morgan Aquino had to make some magnificent saves.
She was brilliant.
So we can't sort of sugarcoat it too much and say that this was a game Glory deserved to win, but I thought there were some nice signs there. And obviously, I've praised Alex on his recruitment. Praise the board as well for backing him as well, because we didn't know what this A-League women's season was going to look like this year, but they've backed Alex. They've backed him with the recruitment early. Some players like Kim Carroll came back, who added a real composure at the back as well. Obviously, getting Lisa Devanna back was a little bit of icing on the cake, and you could see, and I think you commented on it, Blaine, her work rate, it almost fed in to what the other players were doing because they felt as if they had to follow Lisa because her energy was so high.
I think I did mention to you, there was a moment probably 10, 15 minutes in where Lisa just pressed and everyone else went, righto, she's going, we go. And that was the way it went. And it absolutely caused Brisbane a little bit of concern at times. But that's the example that at least someone like Lisa Devanna can bring to that side, which is superb when you've got so many young players and up-and-coming players that they just have someone around. Geez, look to the left, Lisa Devanna, they must still be pinching themselves.
Yeah, and yeah, she's obviously just adds that magnificent experience. And what a player for those youngsters to learn off, as we touched on last week. One of those youngsters, I really liked Alana Janchewski.
Yeah, very good.
She's very tidy on the ball. Good free kick as well, which was a little bit unlucky. It dropped on the top of the net and
everybody thought it was in.
Yep. But there was a lot to like about her. As you know, I'm the number one season ticket holder in the Sadie Lawrence fan club. I think she's brilliant. I loved her at Mum FC last season. All action midfielder. She just broke things up, got around the pitch. Can see why Alex has got her in the team. And I think we've touched on it with Lisa Devanna a little bit, but her and Gemma Crane, both of them are quite unpredictable players. Mm. And that's going to be really fun to watch, but it is going to be a little bit frustrating at times because they're both going to be on a little bit of a different wavelength. They're still gelling. They're obviously still fairly new as teammates. But that's something that's going to be really exciting to watch, I think, just seeing those two link up because they are both a box of tricks. Gemma Crane is a magnificent ball carrier. She can break the lines. Lisa's obviously got that energy. She's been there and done that. She needs no introduction. So I think there's a lot to like about Glory. There's a lot to take forward out of the game. And I'm excited to see whether they can back it up against Brisbane again on Friday.
Yeah, absolutely. I just like what they've built in terms of their depth. You mentioned people like players like Alana Janchewski, but Deborah Della Harp out wide, I thought she was great when she came on. Susan Fonsonkam, who scored the goal, just added a little bit of energy. Poppy Hooks. Alex Aparkas after the match said, look, she's naive. She just goes for everything. She just has a crack. And sometimes that can be the best thing in the world, is just that unpredictability, as you just mentioned. Yeah. Gemma Crane, for me, she was the standout. She just battled hard all day. And it was probably, she certainly played a role in that first one. But even just the pressure, putting on simple pressure like that for that back pass that ended up rolling into the back of the net. So, no, it was absolutely superb. Crowd superb, venue superb, cost superb, $12 to get in. Bit of an advertisement there, Tommy, but there's real no excuse for people not to get out, especially when the men's team is overraced. Get out and support the Glory Girls.
No, 100%. And I think when you fill out a venue like that at Macedonia Park, where you've got that sort of atmosphere underneath the old tin roof there. When that final, when the winning goal went in, the noise was, it gave you a little bit of an adrenaline rush, to be honest. It was a really magnificent thing to sort of be a part of, to celebrate that late winning goal. You saw all the players hanging around on the pitch afterwards as well after the game. And obviously, it was great to win the game. It was a late, dramatic win. But obviously, there were some players there who didn't taste that victory last season. So I think that was really pleasing as well, to see the girls out there interacting with the fans. Alex was obviously doing the rounds as well. He was on the pitch. He was talking to the fans. He actually came up and spoke to some of the season ticket holders who go regularly to the men's games as well, to thank them for their support, which I think is a really nice thing to see as well. So, yeah, there was just a lot to like about that evening as well. And I think Macedonia Park should be congratulated as well, because they put on a pretty good show. The food is excellent there, as always.
Yep.
The beer was cold, and you didn't have to wait too long for one either, which was always a good thing.
No, it was brilliant. Get down there if you can throughout the season, or as much as you can throughout the season, because it was tremendous. I really, really enjoyed my time down there on Saturday evening. I'll certainly be heading back myself, as will Tommy, I imagine. Let's have a bit of a look at those fixtures before we wrap up. Newcastle will take on Wellington at Friday night. That is a double header. Brisbane will take on at Perth. That is 4:45 Perth time on Friday evening. Sydney Derby, 2:05 on Saturday. Melbourne City, Melbourne Victory, Melbourne Derby. So a fair bit happening on that front. 1:05 on Sunday, and it'll finish up with Adelaide United taking on Canberra United on the Sunday. So all looking very, very good as far as the women's game goes.
Just one shout out as well from the weekend's action. Wellington's women as well, who had their first game. Well, either in the W League or obviously the A League women's competition, as is now. It was a goalless draw, but they've got a very young, inexperienced side. And I think we still take it for granted a little bit with these players, including the men also, that they are playing out of Wollongong, and particularly with the women's team as well. You know, there's a lot of players who definitely haven't played at this level before, who are very new to the competition, have maybe had to move from family. But obviously, their coach, Gemma Lewis, is somebody who knows the New Zealand football landscape very well. She's the academy director, I believe, at the Football Ferns, which will no doubt help that familiarity. And I think a lot of people expected them to struggle. Obviously, it's a goalless draw. We can't get too excited, but it was just really nice for them to see them get a point early on in the season, I think. So big up to the Wellington women, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Tommy, that is where we're going to wrap it up for this week. We'll be back next week. Thank you very much for jumping on once again.
No pleasure, mate. See you soon.
No worries. We'll do. Big thank you to our partners in the Sportsmate app, the A-League Live app. Big thank you to everyone for having a listen. If you want to get in touch, make sure you jump on the social media, Facebook or Twitter at The Far Post Perth. Make sure you subscribe also. Apple, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts, that's the way to go about it. Until next time, enjoy your football.